The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I had talked to two different priests from two different states in Nigeria. One is in the middle of the country and one is in the deep south of the country, so quite far apart from each other. One priest in Plateau State had just visited a village where 20 Christians were killed the week before. He met a father who saw four of his children killed in front of his eyes. He saw homes that had been burned. He said, "I stood on the ashes of human beings." They tried to have a funeral for the dead, but some of the people had just been burned so badly that there was nothing to bury. So this is what's going on in Nigeria every week. It's not an exaggeration. Every week, Christians are being killed.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's unbelievable audio. When you hear that, first of all, good afternoon. It is good to be with you. I'm Drew Mariani. Thanks for tuning in, allowing me to hang out with you for a little bit. News is surfacing right now of a genocide that is taking place in Nigeria. And I'll ask you a quick question. Have you heard about it? Probably not, right? I hope that's one of the reasons you tune into this broadcast. I try to give you a look at life that you are not going to find anywhere else. And I'll tell you much more about that. The reports that are coming in are many. In one case, Christians are being forced to dig their own graves. They're then lined up on the edge of their grave, and they're executed. So their executors just had to throw dirt on them at that point in time, right? There are horrible stories that you just heard in that audio of militants attacking crowded churches. One case, they killed 40 people in the mass. Can you imagine that going in? You know how long it took? It wasn't like I just went in there. It was a five-minute ordeal. Horror reigned. Terror reigned. It took over 20 minutes for these horrible acts to be perpetrated. I'll fill you in on what's happening. That's coming up in a little bit in this first hour here. In fact, coming up maybe in about 10 or 15 minutes, I'll dive into that with you. We'll give you a look at a news story that's really underreported, one I think that needs to be talked about in greater detail. I don't think we in the West recognize that Christian persecution is worsening. In fact, I've been told it is the worst that it has been in a very long time. We're going to go to DD, and we're going to go to DD now. I was going to do some news first, Maggie, but let's talk about this now. Let me tell you, I'll fill you in. We'll talk right now about what's happening in Nigeria. This week in Washington, the Biden administration, I don't know if you're aware of this, is they're going to be hosting the U.S. African Leaders Summit. And the summit includes Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. And Buhari is implicated in charges of allowing a persecution against Christians to go on in, I don't know if you're aware of this, Nigeria is the most populous nation on the African continent. So terror is reigning. In addition, the U.S. Institute of Peace, they're going to be hosting a conversation with Buhari on Friday. And it's so ironic because the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, they actually had petitioned the State Department to put Nigeria on a list of what's called countries of particular concern. And that list contains places like North Korea, right? China, Russia, a lot of these other violators of basic human rights of freedom of religion. But, you know, the State Department, I don't understand this. I mean, I get frustrated by the ineptness that I sometimes see happening at Capitol Hill. The State Department rejected the commission's request. The normally diplomatic commission let the State Department, though, know their outrage. And here's what they said. It says, there is no justification for the State Department's failure to recognize Nigeria or India as egregious violators of religious freedom, as they each clearly meet the legal standards for designation as CPCs and USURF is CPCs. USURF, they, of course, are tremendously disappointed that the Secretary of State did not implement recommendations or recognize the severity of the religious freedom violations that both USURF and the State Department have documented in those countries. I find it compelling, in fact, even revealing, that Reuters is doing an investigative series on persecution in Nigeria. And you know what they found? They found that the army was forcing Christian women. Listen to this. This is horrible. And maybe I should give you a caution before I even you know, if there's kids or there's anything else in the room, I'll just, I'll, you know, this it could be disturbing to some people. They're forcing Christian women who've been raped by Boko Haram, right, into forced abortions. And these suffering Christians, these women, these children, these men, they're enduring brutal and inhumane treatment. And you know what? It should not be ignored. It just should not be so. I know you might feel powerless where you are right now and say, Drew, I hate hearing these things. What can I do? First and foremost, you can pray and you can sacrifice. You can allow your elected officials to know what's going on here. Make sure that this is on your radar. You can check out the website SaveThePersecutedChristians.org. That's SaveThePersecutedChristians.org. I've invited Dee Loggison, who's executive director of that organization, to join us today to give us a perspective, a picture of what's now unfolding and what I really believe is really, you know, sorely underreported. Hey, Dee, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for having me on.
I am delighted. I wish we could talk under better circumstances. This is kind of a rough story. I know Reuters is documenting some pretty horrific stuff. I wanted to be careful about how graphic I got, but I mean, I'm hearing of executions, of rape, of a whole lot of other things, including the wholesale slaughter of children. To fill us in on that aspect of this, who's targeting the children and why are they going after the children?
Well, in both cases, the forced abortions being coerced, often violently, on women who, and girls who have just been rescued by the Nigerian military from captivity. If they're found pregnant, they're being forced to have an abortion. And many times they don't even know. They'll just come in and inject them. And a little while later, they're writhing on the floor in pain and bleeding. And before they know it, they're having their baby is being aborted from their body. And the children, the stories that Reuters investigation is revealing is absolutely horrific. Literally, one woman says that she was just rescued by the Nigerian military. They were on their way to the camp, and a soldier asked her to hand him one of her 4-month-old twins, which she did. She handed one of them over, and he smothered it to death and took the other one and did the same. Another witness says he saw the Nigerian military with a pre-dug grave had come upon a scene where men and women were already dead and the Nigerian military was killing the children. Then they just rolled them into the grave, covered them up, and went about their way. So the Nigerian military is being accused of here is crimes against humanity, acts of genocide. Predominantly, the women and girls who are in captivity in Nigeria, held by Boko Haram and Fulani militants and other jihadists, they are Christians. And so this is happening to Christian captives in Nigeria under the Buhari regime. Wow. You know, I can tell you a little bit more about Nigeria. It is the most deadly country on earth for Christians 2 years running, according to the Open Doors World Watch List 2022. That means that every 2 hours, a Nigerian Christian is being killed, 4,650 in the latest report in 1 year. You do the math, that's a Christian every 2 hours. It's just absolutely horrendous what's happening in Nigeria. And Drew, just to let you know, that designation, Save the Persecuted Christians and our coalition partners, the Leia Foundation, the International Committee on Nigeria, and others, we fought to get Nigeria listed as a CPC, which Secretary of State Pompeo did in 2021. And 1 year later, Secretary Blinken turned around and removed them from that list without an explanation or evidence showing that they had improved the situation at all. So this was done for political reasons just before Secretary Blinken went to Nigeria. And now you have President Buhari being invited with, the other 50, it's a total of 50 African leaders coming to stand on the world stage with President Biden and be an acceptable leader. And then to have a conversation at the U.S. Institutes of Peace, our partner Cartotismos Global is hosting a protest outside of the U.S. Institutes of Peace on 23rd Street Northwest between C Street and Constitution on Friday, starting at about 1:45, and they'll stay there until about 3:15. But this cannot stand. We cannot allow Buhari to be given this platform in the United States when he is a murderous thug. The Biden administration are being genocide deniers.
So, yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. I get so frustrated when we know the history, and we have the empirical evidence of this man, his connection to this, and yet the red carpet's rolled out. I don't understand. Why is our administration so blind to this?
Well, Nigeria is, you know, over 200 million in population, as you were saying. In fact, they're going to overtake the population of the United States by 2050.
Wow.
And be the third largest country by population on the planet. They have a lot of resources. They're very rich in resources, especially oil and natural gas, which the United States would like to get their hands on so that we're not producing it here in the United States.
Yep.
And they don't want to create a vacuum where China will come in and provide for Nigeria. So there's a lot of conflict, but there's no foundation to be had in a friendship with a regime that is genocidal. And it's not going to change with the presidential elections coming up this February in Nigeria, because they have Muslim ticket with Tinubu Bola and his vice president, Kashim Shettima. He is the former governor of Borno and is alleged to be a Boko Haram member himself. So, and Bolo is really sick. So it may be that Shettima ends up being the president of Nigeria and having, you know, quite likely been a leader with Boko Haram all these years. It will only get worse.
Absolutely fascinating. So, U.S. is complicit right now. I mean, what can we do individually? Who do we call? Who do we write to? Who do we voice our concern to?
Yeah, well, for really concerned people in the area, come to the protest on Friday at the U.S. Institutes of Peace. And Save the Persecuted Christians has a take action. We're encouraging the public to write to their members of Congress, urging that Congress investigate U.S. aid, both military and humanitarian relief to Nigeria. That money, that support is not getting to the 3.5 million internally displaced people who receive no assistance from the federal government of Nigeria. In fact, they deny that they even exist. So we need to know where all the money that the U.S. has been sending, hundreds of millions of dollars to Nigeria, that's unaccounted for.
That's so true. Well, look, I want to thank you for what you're doing. I really do. We need to bring voice to this. I'm also not just frustrated at the United States government for being complicit in this, turning a blind eye to what we know is a reality, but the news media too. And I don't know how effective, Dee Dee, you've been in getting the message out. I hope more people will start covering this. But, you know, from your mainstream outlets, where a majority of people get their news, I've really not heard a whole lot of this. Why is this not getting greater coverage? There seems to be a disconnect here in the U.S. when it comes to international news. I mean, there's some story, but I know you've been abroad. When you're overseas so often, you get news that's happening in Africa and Asia and all these different parts of the world. The U.S. is not the case, but this is egregious, and there is a connection to our country here. Why aren't we getting more coverage from our mainstream media?
Well, it's absolutely egregious. What we're seeing is that the news media is very much aligned with the Biden administration. And from the Biden administration, from Merrick Garland and even the president, we're seeing the othering of Christians here in America. That means that we're being marginalized, shoved out of the public square, silenced and canceled across the board. So to report on Christian persecution worldwide, which is now at 360 million heavily persecuted
Wow.
Christians in a record number of countries,
Yeah.
what you have is absolute denial of everything that is happening to Christians around the world. The worst persecution the world has ever seen of Christians, and it is not earning the news. This is a 60% increase in just 4 years. When I started with Save the Persecuted Christians in 2018, it was 215 million heavily persecuted Christians. And that seemed absurd at that time. But now it's 360 million and nobody is reporting on it. It really is unheard of.
Well, we're here for you. I'll continue to report on it, make people aware, call them to prayer and to action. And so grateful. I know if people want more information, I guess the best place to go is SaveThePersecutedChristians.org.
Yes, that's the best place to go. We're a U.S. nonprofit, and we'd love to have your listeners support the work that we are doing as a coalition to bring awareness.
So there are more persecuted Christians today than there ever been in the history of the church right now, just in terms of number. You're saying over 300 million?
360 million, that's more than every man, woman, and child in the United States of America.
That's unbelievable. Hey, Dee Dee, thank you. Again, for all that
Thank
you're doing,
you.
We're here with you. Keep us in the loop, okay?
Thanks, Drew.
You got it. That's Dee Dee Loginson. Check out their website if you can help. Of course, it's SaveThePersecutedChristians.org. And we have to do our part. I really do. When I hear these stories, I think it's almost surreal. I mean, you're out of sight, you're out of mind. I have the ability, and I thank God for it, to open my microphone every afternoon and talk to you without fear of being arrested and persecuted for this. You do too. You can walk into a church and you can pray. You know, you can share your faith. There's a lot of Christians around the world that do not have that ability. You know, there was an encyclical called Evangelium Vitae. It was written by John Paul II back in 95. And he once wrote, he says, look, every threat to human dignity must necessarily be, he says, it's got to be felt in the church's very heart. And I was always struck by that line. Every threat to human dignity must be necessarily felt in the, you know, in the church's heart. Our bishops, wrote a document called Recognizing Every Person's God-Given Dignity. And they talk about how we have to cherish the dignity of others, how we've got to do our part. I mean, we've lost, see, here's the problem in our culture, in my own personal view. When we can kill children in the womb, when we can contracept them out of existence, it's very easy then to see a rise in violence in culture, right? It's very easy then to justify other type of behaviors. It's very easy to reject God and his law. It's very easy to see the euthanization of our elderly, right? It's very easy to understand why suicide rates are on the increase. That's what we're seeing at large here. We've lost respect for the dignity of the human person. And these are troubled times. We have to witness to the truth about human dignity at every level, at every level. We've got to be outraged when we hear about Christians, 360 million of those, more than the population of the United States, being put to their death because they believe in Jesus Christ. We have to be outraged when we see how many children every day go to death in the womb of their mother. Where's the outrage? I don't see it. I don't see it. I know you can feel powerless. I know you can. I do sometimes. And I think we underestimate the power of our own sacrifice and our own prayer. I mean, we have to do that, but you also have to take action. You got to speak truth. You know, you've got to support those causes. You've got to get out there. You've got to let your elected officials know. You got to vote for those issues that are most critical. And the top of the pyramid, in my opinion, is always life. Everything else follows. So you got to find out where your candidates are. You know, around the world, Christians are being persecuted for just the mere act of professing their faith. And there are parts of the world where Christians are systematically executed. Now, our own Department of State has labeled a genocide. But here in America, you live in a relatively peaceful place, right? You know, it's not the case. We're seeing different forms of persecution here, right? Instead of a grave being dug and you being executed, what are we now seeing? We're seeing doctors being pressured to go ahead into transgender surgeries, you know, into mutilation. We are seeing teachers being censured for you know, their particular beliefs. You know, we are seeing persecution on all sorts of levels. And the church has always been at the forefront of these critical social issues. And, you know, here in the country, you might say, well, I'm not going to lose my life for my profession of my faith. You might lose your job. You know, you might lose your ability to be invited to the next party or be in a particular social group, but it's a form of martyrdom, and we can really share in that martyrdom of our fellow brothers and sisters, you know, who are suffering truly with their lives. Something just to think about, something to pray about. I'll try to give you, as I often say, that look at life you're not going to find, you know, anywhere else. I think it's important that we continue to talk about these issues and bring them to light. All right. We got a lot coming up today, too. Let me just fill you in on what's going on. I got a lot of news to get to today. But also forgiveness. I want to deal with that a little bit later today. Maybe somebody's really hurt you, or maybe you're having real difficulty forgiving someone. There's an amazing story coming by of what happened to a woman who was tortured by the Nazis and how long it took her to forgive. You'll love that story. But also I want to get you plugged into the extraordinary life of Saint Lucy. She is a powerhouse saint. She is. And lots of miracles taking place through her. If you're having a problem with your eyes, you've got macular degeneration, you've got glaucoma, maybe there's some other problem that you have, night blindness, whatever it may be, you'll hear the story of an artist who was healed through the intercession of St. Lucy. And I like to share these stories because so often we think that's, you know, miracles happen to somebody else. You know, they can happen in your life. And these types of stories aren't something of the past, they're happening today. So when I come back, we'll talk a little bit about St. Lucy. We'll take a look at this powerful miracle. Of course, you're welcome to join me anytime. You can join me 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. More straight ahead. Stay with me.
Live, coast to coast, the Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Trying to stay up on the headlines? The Drew Mariani Show is here for you.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you for thank you for joining me. It's good to be able to, I guess, take a look at life through the eyes of our faith together. In about a half an hour, we will read the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. So if you have a special need or intention, feel free to join me. We're live. You know, there are hundreds of thousands, maybe millions that gather with us around the country and around the world. And Storm Heaven, I mean, it's a powerhouse prayer. So you are more than welcome to get on board. We need to pray for our country. Let me bring you up to speed just on a couple things that are happening. Right now, the Department of Justice has finally admitted to what everyone else already figured out. And this is big news, right? We talk about life, respect for the dignity of the human person, persecution. If there's a group in our country that is being targeted, it's pro-lifers, right? You know it. And life in the end wins. We're on the winning side of this equation. We're going to suffer, yes. But in the end, we win. Life, just like slavery. You know, the culture of death will be vanquished, just like slavery was. We'll look back at thinking, how could you own a human being? And we're going to look back on people are going to be saying, how could you think killing a child was what was justified, right? We're going to look back at those things and think it's ridiculous. How blind could people be? Well, news has surfaced that the Department of Justice, they actually admitted this too, that they've been targeting pro-lifers after the Dobbs decision. That is a frightening thought. We live in the United States of America, land of the free, right? Land of rule and law and order. You've got a government agency targeting citizens, pro-lifers? The associate attorney is a person named Vinita Gupta, associate attorney general, and told people attending the Justice Department Civil Rights Division 65th anniversary celebration that the overturn of Roe v. Wade was just a devastating blow to women throughout the country. That's how they saw this. It was a devastating blow to women. It was a victory for the child in the womb, right? How come nobody looks at it from that perspective? I think it was a great victory. Those children in the womb were leaping with joy. Devastating blow, she says, right? She said that Dobbs took away the constitutional right to abortion. Show me where that is in the Constitution. Show me where that is written in the Constitution. It does not exist in those founding documents. That's why you got overturned, right? She says this has now increased the urgency of the Department of Justice, their work, including enforcement of the FACE Act to ensure continued lawful access to reproductive services. But the FACE Act also protects pro-life centers, right? And just to give you a perspective on the bias here, 98 Catholic churches and 77 pro-life organizations. They've been attacked since the Dobbs decision was leaked, right? Since May. You're talking almost 100 Catholic churches, 77 pro-life organizations. Could you imagine if those were Planned Parenthood centers? Oh my gosh, the investigation, the arrests. It would have been crazy. It would been all over the media. These are acts, domestic acts of terrorism taking place. You know, these extremists, right? No, you don't hear any of that, right? It's okay. Everything's silent. The DOJ is targeting pro-lifers. Catholic churches are being attacked. Pro-life organizations are being attacked. There are death threats, Molotov cocktails being thrown through the window. The DOJ, the Department of Justice, hasn't charged one single person in connection with those attacks. That is outrageous. That is wrong. They are failing to do their duty. They are the Department of Justice. But when you see high-ranking officials say, oh, the overturn of Roe, that's a blow to women's rights. It's an attack on our Constitution. They're taking away the constitutional right to abortion, right? We need to ramp up our attack against these pro-lifers. But no, let's not defend them. Let's not defend those who want to help a pregnant woman in crisis who doesn't want an abortion. She just needs help, right? That's what these centers often do. Not one single person in connection with any of those attacks, the Molotov cocktails, the Jane's Revenge, the death threats, all the things we've reported on over the past several months, not one single person has been charged in connection with it. You know? It's crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. The DOJ has charged 26 pro-life individuals, though, right? 26 of them with FACE Act violations this year. I just want to be here for, I want to zoom out and show you the big picture, right? I mean, I have to eat, breathe, and sleep this news, and I'm constantly immersed in it. And I love to see connections. I love to see patterns. I love to see the thread that ties through these types of things. And when you're able to piece these things together and see the big picture, it really tells you a very different story, doesn't it? You might get one piece of a tapestry and another one here and independently, or one piece of a puzzle, another piece of a puzzle over there. It looks very, you know, innocuous and independent. When you put those pieces together, what do you see? You paint a big picture, and you see a bias, and you see a persecution. That's what I see. That's what's happening. You know, we're talking about, you know, people, 360 million Christians being persecuted worldwide, many of them losing their lives. There are pro-lifers and there are Christians in this country as well that are being persecuted. And that's case in point. That is case in point. One other case in point. How about Twitter, right? God bless Elon Musk. I don't agree with everything the man stands for or does. But this guy continues to want to have an open forum. He wants truth. He wants transparency. Right, he wants to unload those internal Twitter files and show really the collusion that took place between the FBI and Twitter, the Democratic Party and Twitter, the algorithms of bias towards people that they didn't want to trend and whose message they did not want to get out. These Twitter files show that Twitter executives stated very clearly that former President Donald Trump had not violated any of Twitter's policies with his, you know, last two tweets, but internal pressure from the LGBTQ plus Twitter employee group prompted them to buckle. And then what happened? They banned him from the platform. So this news just coming to light. This is not me making this up. I'm just reporting what the latest dump is revealing. Interestingly, as soon as that happened, employees immediately started calling executives to start censoring what they called COVID misinformation, right? This new term, COVID misinformation. So they said, we want everybody to wear masks. We want everybody to get the vaccine. We want everybody to want these mandates. So they censored anything that they personally thought was misinformation, right? They were the arbiters of what was true, what was scientific, right? So all of a sudden we see this algorithm take place and COVID news coming your way may not be the most truthful of news. Barry Weiss, he's one of the two journalists that Musk is giving the files to, and said, you know, concerns about Twitter just aren't, you know, about past choices. But, you know, the executives of this private company, they got to be vigilant. you know, about how they move forward. And he says, you know, there are a handful of powerful people at private companies that can influence, you know, public discourse and democracy. And that's what we saw. You see how fragile, you know, our democracy and the power of discourse to influence it really is. And I think Twitter's a great example of that. You know, when you have these social media giants, Facebook and Google and Twitter, telling you what you need to know, that's called propaganda, you know, and you're being indoctrinated with the information that they want to expose you to. And you take it as true because sources say it's true. You know, we are a stronger nation. We are a healthier republic when we have multiple voices, when we have truth, and when we have discourse. When that's muted, everybody suffers. Maybe one final story here I'll just put on your radar, something else I've been following, maybe one or two. We've been talking about the Respect for Marriage Act, just some news today. And please pray for President Biden. Okay, I mean, this man is so lost and so misguided right now. I know that might offend somebody who loves him, who's a great Democrat out there. But this so-called Catholic man, and I'm looking at it from the eyes of my faith, you know, not a political party. He signed the so-called Respect for Marriage Act, and I don't want to call it that. I want to call it the Disrespect for Marriage Act, because that's really what it is. He signed the Disrespect for Marriage Act into law today. That's a much better name for it. It's so true, right? You'll hear more about the impacts of the law later this week. We'll probably dive into that. But the president invited some very interesting people to the signing ceremony. I love these signing ceremonies. There's 16 pens. All these people gather around. There's big smiles. They feel like they're doing something so historic and so great. You know, it's so nauseating. It's really what it is. It's nauseating. So he signs this new, the Respect for Marriage Act into law today. And he invited a guy who calls himself Marty G. Cummings, and that's Marty with an I. And Marty's actually a drag queen. He has been a very active participant in the whole Drag Queen Story Hour. And Bill Donahue from the Catholic League, he pointed out in a press release today that Michelle Tomasik founded the Drag Queen Story Hour in San Francisco back in 2015. She told a gay media outlet that the goal, and this is something you need to hear, the goal was to introduce kids when they are very young, very malleable, very formative into the LGBTQ plus culture. And I'll just zoom out again and I'll say, okay, that's their agenda. That's their idea. It's clever. What's behind it? A dark spirit is behind it. Something satanic, I believe, is behind it. You know, and I'm not speaking against those with same-sex attraction. I'm saying this is a satanic attack on family and on children. And this is what Sister Lucia De Santis would take place, this final confrontation. And it's playing out before our eyes. It's not hidden, right? You see children being indoctrinated in their schools. You know, you see kids being exposed to drag queen story hours. You know, again, go back, look at the people and what they say. I mean, it's always amazing to me how you come up with this philosophy, ideology, you know, strategy is probably a better word for it, and then how they execute it, right? Whether it's Saul Alinsky or whether it's Michelle Tomasik, it doesn't matter. The American Library Association, Bill Donahue said, is responsible for the spread of those story hours across the country. He says local libraries pay you know, these people to go ahead and run the events. And there was a blog post to the American Library Association a few years ago, and it encouraged librarians to promote LGBTQ agenda. You know, they say, you know, do it sneakingly, you know, fitting stuff in current programs. And of course, that means sneaking it by parents. Here's the president now promoting this stuff. He's signing it into law. Hey, look, it's a very subtle thing. You know, I was having this conversation. What was I talking to about it recently? I forget where I was. We were just talking about how desensitized we've become to this stuff, right? It's almost become mainstream and normal where you're like, who cares, right? You just become numb to it. And then it becomes mainstream and then it just seems normal when really it's aberrant and the long-term fruits of this are bad. They're a poison on the culture. They're a poison on the family. And they lead to the things we're now seeing: destruction of life, loss of respect for human dignity, religious persecution, the loss of religious freedom. All this stuff is mixed together in the same batter. And that's what happens. It's very hard to untangle it. It is really it's in a big tangle right now. There may be some justice, though, coming to Loudoun County, Virginia, to that school dress. Last year, there was a boy that was dressed as a girl. Remember the story? Went into the girl's room. Horrible story. I mean, this is every parent's nightmare, and this is why a lot of parents think we should have separate restrooms and shouldn't let boys in girls' rooms or girls in the boys' rooms. And if you're transgender, I'm all about having a third room for those who feel that way, you know. But let's keep everything separate. This guy, a guy dressed up in a girl's outfit, claimed he was a girl, went in and raped a schoolgirl. He was let go, right, and then went on to rape another girl. This time in a classroom. So clearly this kid had some issues. I mean, it's absolutely horrible. So I think it was the Daily Wire that uncovered what is really just a shameful story. A grand jury yesterday indicted the superintendent on charges of false publication, conflict of interest, prohibited conduct, and penalizing an employee for court appearances. So he's going to be, you know, he's going to receive justice for it. But the spokesman, Wayne Byard, was indicted on a felony charge of perjury. And parents groups right now are happy with these indictments. They're hoping that they will result in legal punishment being given out. So we'll see what happens. Enough dark news. Okay. I mean, this is what's happening in the culture at large. I want you to be aware of it because, you know, evil's not greater than good. Good always conquers evil, right? In the end, we win, right? In the end, life will win, marriage, family, natural law, God's moral law, our faith. We win, you know. Evil can never conquer those things, you know. But we have to do our part. I mean, you have to be aware of what's going on. You can't grow desensitized or numb to this. You have to continue to speak truth to your children about it. You have to continue to be willing to suffer. And you will suffer for speaking truth in your social groups about things that you know are immoral and wrong, right? So often, and look, we all do this, right? You're in a social group, somebody's saying something, and you stay silent or maybe even agree. You kind of nod your head, oh, yeah, I can understand that. You know, maybe you don't say anything at all. And you know what they're saying is really wrong. It's immoral. I mean, you might be, it may take a lot of fortitude and courage to speak the truth. You might suffer for that. Maybe, like I said, you won't be invited to the next party. But we can do our part. You can offer that up. We can make small sacrifices. We can be light in the darkness. We can be a voice of truth, you know, in that wilderness. And that's what we're called to do. If we do that, we're going to make our community, our family, our culture, our country a much stronger and a much better place. You know, the church, you know, the blood of martyrs really, it waters the seeds of faith, doesn't it? And we see this across the centuries. And you and I may not lose our life. We might, but more than likely in America, we probably are not. But there are all sorts of other ways that we will be persecuted and suffering. 360 million Christians around the world today suffering persecution and martyrdom. You and I in the land of the comfy, right? In the land of abundance. You know, how are we called to join our brothers in that sacrifice? Something to think about and pray about. When I come back, I'll share with you the story of a martyr who had her eyes gouged out. Stay with me.
Getting you connected. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, flexible premium life insurance. You know, for less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. Let's pray today for you, for your needs, for your intentions. Pray for vision, for eyesight. I have a friend whose son lost his eyesight in a tragic accident. The kid was 16, 17 years old, maybe. Great football player, future career ahead of him. And took a bullet and lost his sight. Tragic. I actually thought about talking to him because he's... Imagine having vision. I can see being born without sight and trying to make your way through life. It's kind of your reality. It's interesting. Those who die and have near-death experiences who've never seen, when they come back, this is such a fascinating afterlife fact. They can see. They talk about color and images that they've never had an exposure to here on this side of the veil, but on the other, everything was made clear. So it's kind of cool. God heals. God brings about miracles. We hear this all of the time. I'll share with you the story of a saint who, if you are having vision problems, you might want to go ahead and turn to. Her name's St. Lucy. Today, we remember her life. We've been talking about persecution, right? Martyrdom. She fits to the day perfectly, doesn't she? A very young holy woman. She lived in the third century. She was inspired by another martyr, by St. Agatha. And she decided to dedicate her life to God. And if you're struggling with purity, this is the other thing. Maybe you should turn up the radio. You know, if you're dealing right now with pornography, or if you're in an illicit relationship with maybe your boyfriend, or, you know, you're dealing with just a sexual proclivity, St. Lucy is your saint. I'm telling you, she's the perfect saint. Her and St. Mary of Egypt. Those are the two girls that I would certainly turn to in this time. So you're talking third century, right? At this time, she was betrothed to a man. But Lucy had this connection to God. She felt so called to just dedicating her life to God. She wanted to remain a virgin. And she wanted to take the dowry that her father was going to give for the marriage and just give it away to the poor. And this just enraged the man that she was to be married to, who she was betrothed to. So at the time, he figured, you disrespected me. And he took her in front of the local authorities. The man, he was a consul. His name was Pascasius, I think it was his name at the time. If I remember serving me right. And he brought her before him, because right now, Christian persecution, you weren't allowed to be a Christian in this time, or you're persecuted. So her betrayed said, okay, I'm going to show you. You know, you don't want to marry me? Brought her before the authorities and said, she's a Christian, right? She's a Christian. And the local authorities commanded her to offer sacrifice to pagan gods to show that she was not a Christian. If he did that, he'd let her go. Lucy adamantly refused. And she says, I'm a Christian. And she refused. She stood by her faith, willing to suffer whatever was about to follow. So this consular, this Pascasius, he was astonished by her fearlessness. She had no fear whatsoever. So he thought, you know what? I'm going to break your will. You're going to offer incense to these gods. So here is some text known as the Golden Legend, narrated from, it's a medieval text. So here's what he said to her, and I'll just share some of the exchange. He says to her, the sting of the whip will silence your lip. Right? So Lucy said, those who live chaste lives, we are the temple of the Holy Spirit. He says, then I shall have you taken to a brothel, and your body will be defiled, and you will lose your Holy Spirit. And Lucy says, the body is not defiled unless the mind consents. I love that. Says, if you have me ravished against my will, my chastity will be doubled, and the crown will be mine. You've never been able to force my will. As for my body, here it is, ready for every torture. What are you waiting for? Son of the devil, begin. Carry out your cruel designs. So what he did, this is, again, I'm taking this from the text. Pascasius basically, he set up his plan, and he invited all these people over to take their pleasure with her and let them abuse her till she was dead. So when they approached Lucy to have their licentious ways, they couldn't move her. You know, I've shared this. This is a weird phenomenon. This is a really strange phenomenon that happens. So they wanted to move her to, I don't know, they wanted to lay her down, move her to a brothel. I don't know what they were going to do, but she was unmovable. They said they called, hundreds of men were summoned to try to move her from where she was. And he even sent for a yoke of oxen to move Lucy, but the Holy Spirit made her immovable. Remember the other story I shared with you before about this? The martyrs of Otranto, when what happened was the Turks came in, they were invading this town in Italy, Otranto, and they were Christian. They weren't going to give up the faith. They were Catholic. And they said, if you do not surrender, you know, we're going to sell your women and your children into slavery, and we're going to kill you all. The men didn't surrender. They invaded the city. They took the head off of a guy. I think his name was Promaldi, the first man. They cut his head off, you know, to execute him, and he fell, and then he stood right back up again. And headless, he held his hand, and he was unable to be moved. They were freaked out by this, right? And they brought in men. They brought in horse. They tried to move this guy's body. It remained implacable, unmovable, right? And 800 men, one after the other, seeing this, went to their death. In fact, one of the Turk invaders who witnessed the courage of these men and their testimony for their faith, he got in line, and he was martyred on that day too. So it's a phenomenon that you think, oh, that's a legend. Is it legend? I don't think so. If statues can weep, right? If food can multiply, if the sun can spin, if rosaries can turn to gold, right? If somebody can walk on water, if the dead can rise, why is it so inconceivable? Why do we limit our faith that something like this can happen? So they were going to rape her, have their way with her, have the town, and he invited everyone to what he calls, I'm taking this from the text, take their pleasure with her. She was unable to be moved. So they then brought in, after the yoke of oxen, they brought in magicians to remove whatever spell, you know, Lucy had on her, right? Of course, the magicians were unable to move her as well. They were unsuccessful. So at his very wit's end, Poscatius basically set a fire up to be built around her. And then they put boiling oil. They poured it on top of her head. In the midst of it, Lucy, they say, remained pure and inviolate and untouched by these many attempts to defile her. So what ended up happening was here, you know, she's not dead. The other martyr who I always amaze, and I'll tie it back to another martyrdom, St. John, right, who stood at the foot of the cross. When he was at the foot of the cross, he was willing to go to his death. He stood there by the Virgin Mary. He was later boiled in oil, and the oil had no effect on him, none. So again, you see how God can affect the laws of nature, and that's what happened here. So these attempts to burn her, you know, to kill her with boiling oil, nothing seems to work. So finally, he gouges out her eyes. He drew a sword, right? He gouged out her eyes. You often see her statue depicted with these two eyes on a plate, right? Kind of macabre, kind of weird looking. Gouges out her eyes, then draws a sword. And the very last blow, they claim, was what gave her martyrdom. You know, you'll see a gouge in the side of her neck as well. So often I've prayed at her tomb before. It's a pretty amazing sight. But in the midst of all that darkness and all that evil, Lucy remained a light. You know, she's a witness to purity. She's a witness to the love of her faith and her belief in our faith. And she dedicated herself to God. And God protected her in that time of need. So even though you might sacrifice and lay down your reputation, your life, you know, you might suffer a humiliation, God's there with you. And I'm telling you what, there are graces that the martyrs receive, and there are graces that you will receive as well. But I invite you to pray with me today if you want. Let's invite St. Lucy. I believe in the intercession of the saints. We turn to St. Faustina so often as we pray the chaplet and Blessed Michael Sopochko. St. Lucy today, if you are suffering vision problems, macular degeneration, glaucoma, maybe you have problems with your retina. And here's one other thing too, and this is such a wonderful perspective as well. We often look at the physical. What about that spiritual blindness? Maybe your spouse is obstinate in his rejection of the faith. Maybe it's your kids, right? Maybe there's a real blindness to the truth of sexuality or life. Let's pray that those spiritual blinders be removed, that our vision will become clarified, right? That we'll be able to see, that our spiritual landscape will become clear. We'll ask St. Lucy to intercede for us. You can join me for the chaplet. It's the highlight of the day. 888-914-9149. That's your direct line as we gather with the saints and our brothers and sisters all around the nation. Stay with me. I'll be right back.